Morning.
John Lemon for Pedro Moites-Pineda, defendant appellant. Your Honor, Mr. Moites-Pineda's conviction should be reversed because he was merely a passenger in a vehicle and there's utterly no evidence of his dominion and control over the drugs that were in the car. And this court has repeatedly held that where someone is a passenger and there's no evidence of dominion and control, even where that passenger must be aware of the drugs, that is insufficient evidence to support a conviction. The two cases that are directly on point are United States v. Sanchez-Mata and United States v. Ramirez.
Right. You would concede you can't limit this to direct evidence. We have to consider circumstantial evidence as well.
We do consider circumstantial evidence, but as this court said in United States v. Orduno-Aguilera, circumstantial evidence and reasonable inferences therefrom do not relieve the government of their obligation to present evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. And that case was a Rule 29 that was granted on appeal, or the denial was reversed on appeal, I should say. But in any event, Sanchez-Mata and Ramirez are indistinguishable from Mr. Moites-Pineda's case. In Sanchez-Mata,
there is somewhat of a distinction, isn't there, in the facts of this case, with the context of the suspicious entry of the vehicle into the U.S., apparently not used to smuggle illegal aliens, and the large amount of marijuana that was in the vehicle visible to the agent. Don't these kind of distinguish both Ramirez and Sanchez-Mata?
Actually, Your Honor, they don't inform the analysis. First of all, in Sanchez-Mata, the car, the Audi that Sanchez-Mata was a passenger in, was traveling 95 miles per hour. There had been an ongoing investigation and surveillance into a narcotics conspiracy. There was another car that was involved. There were other defendants in the case from the arrest of the red Toyota that was related to the Audi. So it's very similar. As far as
the dope is in the trunk, in a duffel bag in the trunk, right?
Yes.
And here the dope is here in the passenger compartment. He's practically sitting on top of it.
Well, it wasn't exactly in the passenger compartment. It was an SUV, so there was no trunk per se. It was in the back portion of the SUV.
There's a piece of cardboard separating the...
Correct. And I I'm going to concede there was sufficient evidence that Mr. Moites had knowledge. But the issue here...
Well, because you've got the smell of marijuana, too. You've got the dark windows. You've got expert testimony from the officers about some surveillance, about other vehicles that are circling around when the vehicle comes in. You have testimony about the particular area and the criminal activity that it's known for, right?
Well, it's not expert testimony. There was testimony from the agents as to the fact that alien smuggling takes place in this region, which is important, that also people try to illegally enter the United States at this region, which is also important. But again, what I'm getting at is...
What do they say about drug dealing in that area?
Well, drug dealing takes place there too, but that's... What I'm getting at is with respect to the knowledge of the marijuana, it is no different than Sanchez-Mata, because in that case, the courts expressly held that the defendant must have had knowledge based on his nervousness, the overwhelming odor, and his prior conviction for drug dealing. And nonetheless, there was no evidence of dominion and control. Ramirez was the same. Based on Ramirez's nervousness, the court deemed that he had knowledge, and nonetheless said there's no evidence of dominion and control.
What significance should we attach to the fact that there were no personal belongings of Moites-Pineda in the car?
Absolutely none. There is no burden.
Doesn't that suggest that he wasn't hitchhiking or trying to get into the United States illegally?
Well, it's not his burden to present.
I didn't say it's his burden, but that fact is in evidence. What can we deduce from that?
Well, I don't think we can deduce anything from that because it doesn't show dominion and control over the marijuana. But to the extent that we're going to, I think that it doesn't, it's not really incumbent upon Mr. Moites to hypothesize as to possible innocent explanations, but to the extent that we do that, the case agent in this case testified, first of all, that his initial reaction was he suspected alien smuggling, narcotics trafficking, or both. In other words, this could have been a combination load. And the point of that being that Mr. Moites-Pineda could have just as easily been cargo as he was involved in the drug smuggling.
There's no evidence of that, though.
Well, right. But the agent did testify that he suspected alien smuggling.
And that's why he stopped them, right?
Right. But what I'm getting at is Mr. Moites was an undocumented alien. There is no evidence that he had dominion and control over the marijuana. He could just as easily have been human cargo. So, and by innocent explanation, I'm not saying innocent of any crime. I'm saying innocent of involvement in narcotics trafficking.
Well, and that he could have been acquitted, and I'm sure that you argued that, but he wasn't. So if there's if the circumstantial evidence is subject to another interpretation, then do you still win?
But there is no circumstantial evidence of dominion and control here. There's absolutely none. As far as the other vehicles that were involved in the other surveillance, that is just like Sanchez Mata. And it's also like another, I think it was United States versus Thomas, a case from 1972, where there were two vehicles involved in an apprehension at the border. There was suspicious activity, undeniably, but that does not, that goes to the driver, not the passenger. That does not impute dominion and control to Mr. Sanchez Mata. I'm sorry, to Mr. Moites Pineda. And again, in the Ramirez case, Ramirez was again a passenger in the vehicle, again deemed by this court to have knowledge of the drugs. There were no drugs on his person, just like Mr. Moites. There was no cash on his person, just like Mr. Moites. He did not resist or attempt to flee, just like Mr. Moites. And he had utterly no connection to the vehicle, just like Mr. Moites.
Well, for sake of argument right now, if we disagree with you and we find sufficient evidence for the conviction for possession of intent to distribute, do you concede that there is also sufficient evidence for the importation count?
It's the same analysis, but I think that if your honors do find that there is sufficient evidence, I think you overrule Sanchez Mata, and I think you overrule Ramirez. And I see that I have about 3.5 minutes left.
Would you like to save that for rebuttal?
Yes, please.
Thanks, Mr. Lemon. Morning.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Lawrence Casper for the appellee, the United States, in this case. Your Honors, you've just heard Moites' counsel tell you essentially that the fact that there are 512 pounds of raw marijuana sitting with his client in the passenger compartment of the SUV should not be significant.
Well, let me ask you this, to jump right into it, that obviously we have to deal with our Ninth Circuit precedent. And, you know, absent the Ninth Circuit precedent, it's an easier case. I mean, I think that arguably a lot of the Ninth Circuit precedent where they say that there's not sufficient evidence, I think you could put that in front of 100 juries and they would still find that there was. But we still have to deal with our precedent. So tell us why this is distinguishable. What do we have in this case that would distinguish it from those cases where the Ninth Circuit previously found there wasn't sufficient evidence?
Certainly, Your Honor. The facts here are vastly different from the mere presence cases that this Court has previously decided. Here we have ample evidence the rational trier of fact could find possession beyond a reasonable doubt. We have 20 bales or 500 pounds of marijuana stacked in the passenger compartment just behind Moites' front passenger seat. We have an SUV making a stealthy entry, traversing roadless and isolated sand dunes to illegally enter the United States with a load of marijuana. We have blackened windows which were spray painted. We have marijuana in plain view of Mr. Moites, and in fact the agent could immediately see the bales through a gap in the cardboard between.
So far you've told us everything that proves he knew it was there. He concedes he knew it was there. What do you have to show that it was under his dominion and control?
Well, Your Honor, we have two cell phones that were found to match the two vehicle occupants. In addition to dominion and control, Your Honor, constructive possession has been shown by showing that this is a joint venture. And, Your Honor, clearly here the facts support that this was a joint venture.
What's the cell phone? I didn't catch what you were saying about the cell phone.
There were two cell phones in the vehicle to match the two occupants of the
What does
vehicle.
That prove?
Well, Your Honor, that does indicate with the activity a reasonable inference could be drawn by the members of the jury that with the two individuals in the vehicle, with the cell phones, with the various scouting activity going on, that there were communications.
Because he had a cell phone?
Yes, Your Honor. But in addition to that, Your Honor.
There are a lot of people who have cell phones, you know.
Your Honor, I recognize that. And that is by no means the strongest evidence here. In fact, each of the cases that appellant relies upon, for example, Sanchez Mata, involved duffel bags in the trunk. Ramirez was a spare tire case. Esquivel Ortega was a bumper compartment. These are cases where the drugs are hidden. This court has given great weight where the drugs are in plain view, are in close proximity to the defendant. Here he could reach out, reach behind him, touch them, move them. Obviously, with 500 pounds of marijuana, and I urge the court to take a look at the Magallan-Jimenez case, which addresses this issue, where there was a box at the feet of the defendant. Yes, he moved the box where the box was at his feet, but here we have 500 pounds of marijuana.
Was there any testimony in the trial about, because of the amount of marijuana, that it would be, that it would have to, that it would generally be a joint venture with more than one person because of having to move it, load it, all of that sort of stuff?
There was not testimony to that effect. Certainly that inference could be drawn by the jury. In addition, Your Honors, no reasonable smuggler is going to take an individual as a witness on this venture. This individual would, with 500 pounds of marijuana, be able to identify the driver, would be able to essentially out the entire operation. These smugglers took ample precautions throughout their smuggling effort to ensure that that was not the case. They had three cars circling the highway to ensure that stealth was maintained. They had on the sand dunes, they had an ATV rider to ensure that stealth was maintained. Why would they possibly put a witness in the car who was capable of identifying the driver, potentially identifying others involved with the smuggling effort? Your Honors, reasonably.
What about Judge Silverman mentioned that the defendant didn't have any, like, clothing or anything that would indicate that he was a hitchhiker. How would you argue the significance of that?
Well, Your Honors, the courts have held that where there's an innocent explanation for a defendant's conduct, the government must produce evidence that would allow a rational jury to conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that the explanation suggesting the defendant engaged in wrongdoing is, in fact, the correct one. And here, that's precisely what occurred. Each of these pieces of evidence goes to show that this was not an innocent hitchhiker, quote-unquote innocent hitchhiker, who got in the vehicle. There was no backpack. There was no change of clothes for Moitez. There was not even a jacket for Moitez. There was no money for Moitez. There was no drinking water in the vehicle. And, in fact,
was the defendant's theory of trial based on his testimony or based on counsel speculating why he could have been there?
And it is precisely based on counsel speculation. Of course, reasonable doubt cannot be based on speculation.
Did they offer any evidence in their case in chief?
I believe the only evidence that was offered was a stipulation between the parties that was introduced by counsel at the time of trial.
What did they stipulate?
The stipulation went to the issues of the quantity of drugs in the vehicle and so forth. It had nothing to do with the possession issue specifically. And in fact, Your Honors, this was plainly a joint venture set up for no purpose other than marijuana smuggling, a marijuana mobile, if you will. The district judge here observed that, quote, any reasonable interpretation is that it is a load vehicle without any innocent purpose. We cited that in our brief, and it's excerpts of Record 1, page 16. There is no and can be no reasonable innocent explanation for the circumstances in this case traveling.
Well, Mr. Casper, isn't your argument for the government similar to the Esquivel-Ortega argument of the must have known and certainly wasn't enough to sustain the convictions in that case?
Well, Your Honor, in that case, the cocaine was not detected by a narcotic detector dog. It was contained, in fact, in a bumper compartment of the vehicle. It was not a case that in which circumstances were such as this, where the vehicle traveled plainly through roadless sand dunes. So a vehicle traveling on the road with a passenger who there was a conceivable innocent explanation. In this case, we at trial demonstrated that the so-called innocent explanation provided by the defense was in fact mere speculation, and that there was not sufficient evidence to allow that there was sufficient evidence to allow a reasonable jury to conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that the theory suggested by the government that this was a joint venture was in fact the correct one. So on that basis, this Court can and should distinguish Esquivel-Ortega, just as it should distinguish the other cases, including, for example, the Thomas case, which was cited by Appellant, which involved a non-factory compartment, again, discovered at the port of entry. So each of those cases in which this Court has found mere presence wasn't sufficient is distinguishable on the facts, is distinguishable based on the facts in this case. To correct and follow up on one thing that the appellant argued, which was that there was drug smuggling in the area, the testimony of the agent at trial was that, yes, that drug smuggling was prevalent in the area, but with respect to alien smuggling, which is what appellant argued, the alien smuggling by that time had been stopped, essentially, because there was an ATV unit out there on the sand dunes, which had precluded and suspended the alien traffic on the dunes. In addition, the crossing here was in the middle of the afternoon. The testimony was that to the extent there previously had been alien smuggling traffic, that traffic had been at night when it was cooler and easier to travel. And again, we have traveling through the sand dunes in the middle of the day, an individual with no water, no supplies in the vehicle.
Which case is most helpful to your position?
Your Honor, I would suggest that the Court look to Magallan-Jimenez, in which the Court found that a rational trier could conclude that the defendant knew about, possessed, and intended to distribute cocaine, and found that it was highly unlikely in that case that the defendant would be sitting with a 10-pound box of cocaine at his feet if he was merely tagging along or was there for some purely innocuous reason. Like that case, here we have circumstances which are beyond credulity that this individual would simply have hopped in this vehicle with 500 pounds of marijuana that he's literally sitting on as Justice.
What about Valles Valencia?
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, in regard to what aspect of the cases?
Do you think that case is helpful to you? You don't need to. You're on overtime. If it's not immediately at your fingertips, don't concern yourself.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kessler. Mr. Lemon, you've got about 3 minutes and change left.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, just briefly with respect to a couple of authorities that Your Honor's inquired about and the counsel cited, Magallan-Jimenez, the defendant in that case, the passenger, was found by this Court, at least in its statement of facts, to have had direct possession of the cocaine, and the logical inference was that he had moved the box of cocaine, which was he had taken it from someplace else in the vehicle and put it between his feet. Here, Mr. Moites Pineda did not have any drugs on his person, and again, this is an SUV, so there was no trunk per se, but it was at the back of the SUV where the marijuana was stacked. He was not within arm's reach. It wasn't something that he had direct control over or could have had direct control over. With respect to the Valle...
What do you make of the quantity of the load? This is not something that one person could lift. It's 500 pounds? Isn't that another fact that permits us to draw an inference that these guys were in it together?
Well, Your Honor, there was a smuggling organization at work here. There were other vehicles that were spotted by the agents. There were people on ATVs. There's no question that this was the smuggling organization, but that doesn't, again, directly implicate Mr. Moites Pineda.
Well, but it also has marks of being a load vehicle, in that the windows are darkened, that the whole vehicle is modified in a way to carry 500 pounds, everything. And if it's a load vehicle, like it's a drug house or something like that, that certainly gives indications of, an aiding and abetting or, kind of a joint operation.
So definitely it was undeniably a load vehicle, but again, I hesitate to go down this road because it isn't Mr. Moites's burden to present hypothetical explanations of innocence, but as long as we're doing that, again, the agent testified, I want to be very clear about this, he testified that when he saw the vehicle, he recognized it as a load vehicle and suspected drug smuggling, alien smuggling, or both. That's what he wrote in his report. He started to waffle a little bit on cross-examination on that point. I impeached him with his report. Those are word for word what he put in his report. Narcotic smuggling, alien smuggling, or both. And so it is conceivable that this was not necessarily a drug smuggling venture with respect to Mr. Montes Pineda. And again, that's not our burden, but if the court's troubled by possible innocent explanations, that is one. An additional one is that, again, the government tried to clean it up on redirect, but the agent testified that he personally had apprehended hundreds of people trying to illegally enter the United States in that area. And, of course, Mr. Montes, in his post-arrest statement, which did not come into evidence, stated that he was not in the United States. One other thing that I wanted to address was this idea that no reasonable smuggler would bring a witness. That applies with equal force to Sanchez Mata. It applies with equal force to Ramirez and also to the Thomas case, and I think I'm citing that correctly, from 1972, where you have people who are passengers, and this court has repeatedly held that absent evidence of dominion and control, the Rule 29 should have been granted. And again, with respect to that Thomas case, there was a follow vehicle which was involved in the importation, or at least the agents believed that to be the case. There were matching walkie-talkies. There was one in the follow vehicle and one in the vehicle that Mr. Thomas was in. And the vehicle also had an overwhelming odor of marijuana in that case. So I think that this court's precedent is clear and requires the conviction to be reversed.
Thanks, Mr. Lemon. Mr. Kessler, thank you. The case just argued is submitted. Good morning.